Welcome to National Liberty Alliance weekly call. Today is Monday, December 30th, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening over Rumble or YouTube or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on our weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anybody would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating a month or more. Look on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. All right, let's see, we're going to pick up with our scripture reading. We had left off last week, if I can find it. All right, take me a second. I thought I had that ready to go. Guess I didn't. Okay, we're in the Gospel of John. We're picking up in chapter 8, Gospel of John.
Chapter 8. Jesus went unto the Mount of Olives. And early in the morning he came again into the temple, and all the people came unto him, and he sat down and taught them. And the scribes and Pharisees brought unto him a woman taken in adultery. And when they had set her in the midst, they say unto him, Master, this woman was taken in adultery, in the very act. Now Moses in the law commanded us that such should be stoned, but what sayest thou? This they said, tempting him, that they might have to accuse him. But Jesus stooped down, and with his finger wrote on the ground, as though he heard them not. So when they continued asking him, he lifted up himself and said unto them, He that is without sin among you, let him first cast a stone at her. And again he stooped down and wrote on the ground. And they which heard it, being convicted by their own conscience, went out one by one, beginning at the eldest, even unto the last. And Jesus was left alone, and the woman standing in the midst. When Jesus had lifted up himself and saw none but the woman, he said unto her, Woman, where are those thine accusers? Hath no man condemned thee? She said, No man, Lord. And Jesus said unto her, Neither do I condemn thee. Go and sin no more. Then spake Jesus again unto them, saying, I am the light of the world. He that followeth me shall not walk in darkness, but shall have the light of life. The Pharisees therefore said unto him, Thou bearest record of thyself. Thy record is not true. Jesus answered and said unto them, Though I bear record of myself, yet my record is true. For I know whence I came and whither I go, but ye cannot tell whence I come and whither I go. Ye judge after the flesh. I judge no man. And yet if I judge, my judgment is true. For I am not alone, but I and the Father that sent me. It is also written in your law that the testimony of two men is true. I am one that bear witness of myself, and the Father that sent me beareth witness of me. Then said they unto him, Where is thy Father? Jesus answered, Ye neither know me nor my Father. If ye had known me, ye should have known my Father also. These words spake Jesus in the treasury, as he taught in the temple, and no man laid hands on him, for his hour was not yet come. Then said Jesus again unto them, I go my way, and ye shall seek me, and shall die in your sins. Whither I go, ye cannot come. Then said the Jews, Will he kill himself? Because he saith, Whither I go, ye cannot come. And he said unto them, Ye are from beneath, I am from above. Ye are of this world, I am not of this world. I said therefore unto you that ye shall die in your sins. For if ye believe not that I am he, ye shall die in your sins. Then said they unto him, Who art thou? And Jesus saith unto them, Even the same that I said unto you from the beginning. I have many things to say and to judge of you. But he that sent me is true, and I speak to the world those things which I have heard of him. They understood not that he spake to them of the Father. Then said Jesus unto them, When ye have lifted up the Son of Man, then shall ye know that I am he, and that I do nothing of myself. But as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. And he that sent me is with me. The Father hath not left me alone, for I do always those things that please him. As he spake these words, many believed on him. Then said Jesus to those Jews which believed on him, If ye continue in my word, then are ye my disciples indeed. And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. They answered him, We be Abraham's seed, and were never in bondage to any man. How sayest thou, ye shall be made free? Jesus answered them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Whosoever committeth sin is the servant of sin. And the servant abideth not in the house forever, but the Son abideth forever. If the Son therefore shall make you free, ye shall be free indeed. I know that ye are Abraham's seed, but ye seek to kill me because my word hath no place in you. I speak that which I have seen with my Father, and ye do that which ye have seen with your father. They answered and said unto him, Abraham is our father. Jesus saith unto them, If ye were Abraham's children, ye would do the works of Abraham. But now ye seek to kill me, a man that hath told you the truth, which I have heard of God. This did not Abraham. Ye do the deeds of your father. Then said they to him, We be not born of fornication, we have one Father, even God. Jesus said unto them, If God were your Father, ye would love me. For I proceeded forth and came from God. Neither came I of myself, but he sent me. Why do ye not understand my speech? Even because ye cannot hear my word. Ye are of your father the devil, and the lusts of your father ye will do. He was a murderer from the beginning, and abode not in the truth, because there is no truth in him. When he speaketh a lie, he speaketh of his own, for he is a liar and the father of it. And because I tell you the truth, ye believe me not. Which of you convinceth me of sin? And if I say the truth, why do ye not believe me? He that is of God heareth God's words. Ye therefore hear them not, because ye are not of God. Then answered the Jews and said unto him, Say we not well that thou art a Samaritan and hast a devil? Jesus answered, I have not a devil, but I honor my Father, and ye do dishonor me. And I seek not mine own glory. There is one that seeketh and judgeth. Verily, verily, I say unto you, if a man keep my saying, he shall never see death. Then said the Jews unto him, Now we know that thou hast a devil. Abraham is dead, and the prophets. And thou sayest, If a man keep my saying, he shall never taste of death. Art thou greater than our father Abraham, which is dead, and the prophets are dead? Whom makest thou thyself? Jesus answered, If I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father that honoreth me, of whom ye say that he is your God. Yet ye have not known him, but I know him. And if I should say, I know him not, I shall be a liar, like unto you. But I know him, and keep his saying. Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day, and he saw it, and was glad. Then said the Jews unto him, Thou art not yet 50 years old, and hast thou seen Abraham? Jesus said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, Before Abraham was, I am. Then took they up stones to cast at him, but Jesus hid himself, and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by.
Okay. All right. By the way, the queue is open. Anybody wants to get into the queue, it's a *6 and 1 if you're on a phone, and if you're on an app or a browser, should be a button there to get into the queue. Terry, do we have any questions tonight?
Yeah, we have several. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. I hadn't counted them yet. Thank you. I had one from a person who said, Hello, I am at the appellate stages of my CPS case. They will try and terminate my parental rights February 2025. Please help. They have lied to the judge, violated due process, and my lawyer misrepresented throughout the trial. I haven't submitted my affidavits or any kind of motion because I was unaware of my rights. Please help us save my family. And then there's a name and a number and an email address.
Right. Well, it's difficult for me to get involved with any particular cases. I mean, I'm really tied up with so many things. I mean, if people have any specific questions, I might be able to help them here on the open forum. That's why we do an open forum every Monday, so we're available to talk to people. We also have a course. I know once you're kind of stuck in the middle of a case and now you're going to try to learn, it's very difficult, and it takes a while to really learn this stuff and how things work. And it is true what you said about lawyers, generally speaking, anyway, because they don't seem to ever represent the people. They play the game and play, really, they hold the court up above you. And lawyers are really the minions of the New World Order. They're destructive. They're not going to bring you common law. They can't see common law. They really can't. I've had so many conversations with lawyers and even some communications with judges, and they just cannot see the common law. They're true believers of the Roman law, you know, civil law. So it's real difficult. Anyway, I don't know what I could do for that person particularly. I mean, there are so many people also that have these kind of problems, and, you know, we are working in the courts to get justice back. That's our big focus. We've been working and focusing on that for many, many years now. I think we started in 2014. I got it correct about 8 years ago. And by the way, someone's got an open mic and bleeding through me. So, but anyway, we're trying to get the courts back to courts of justice. Now, I know they mentioned it was a CPS case, and so I have no clue on what really is involved. So I don't know what kind of advice I could possibly even give, other than the fact that these cases, first of all, you can challenge jurisdiction. I don't know if there was a jury involved. And if there was a jury involved, then the question becomes, was it a stacked jury? And in all likelihood, it was. You'd have to do some investigations to find that out. And then, of course, that would be a position to make your argument. You won't get anywhere with those positions or any just or righteous position in these courts today. But I do think that come January, at the end of January, coming into February, March, I think we're going to get some, get some good things happening as far as in the federal courts are concerned to get courts of justice back. We've served a lot of papers onto the United States Supreme Court, not directly at them, but generally speaking, trying to get the courts of justice back, that you can't get them in a federal court. And I do believe we're going to get that because there's been silence since we've been filing our last papers, and they haven't returned them, which is very interesting that they haven't returned our papers. They are silent. They're not saying nothing. We anticipated silence if they did keep them. We've seen what the courts, some of the decisions that have been made, which is pretty interesting, over the past year or two on the United States Supreme Court level. And I think they know that they have no choice but to give us our courts back, because right now the courts have been seized over by the bar. The Bar Association has seized 100% control of our courts. They control the judiciary. But once we get the federal courts back, it's a slam dunk on state courts, because we can use the federal courts to enforce and require proper due process in courts of law with unstacked juries. So, as far as the question and the case, I'm not familiar enough with the case to give any thoughts or ideas, and I don't have any. If I can ask some questions and add some answers, maybe I can give some thoughts. But your case would really be preparing it for in the near future, hopefully the near future, but in the future, because you're not going to get justice in these courts. You're just not going to get it. So, and that's a sad situation that we're in. All right, next question, Terry.
How does one enforce courts of record on magistrates who believe they are the court and attempt to run over the actual court of record? How best to proceed to educate those in authority about why they must do what their oath commands? For an example, sheriffs, writs of error, bench warrants, sheriffs, FBI, if federal.
I didn't understand the last part of that.
He just put writs of error, bench warrants, sheriffs, and FBI down there. I think those are the options that he understands about the best way to proceed to educate those in authority about why they must do what their oath commands.
Yeah, well, they're not open to education. They're not open to correction. They only know their civil law. They've been taught the civil law. They're true believers of the civil law. It's a shame to begin with, because these people have an education, and yet they've done nothing on their own. They've just received the pablum that they've been given in school, digest it, and then execute these things. They're true believers of the civil law. They believe that the common law has been abrogated. Now, how can it possibly be that the common law is abrogated when we're a common law nation? We have a common law document. So the Constitution is a common law document. The Bill of Rights is a common law document. And, of course, we know in 1934, the Rules of Enabling Act that they used in order to abrogate the common law, whereas in 1938, the Federal Judiciary executed the rules. And by a rule of a court, they've done away with common law. Literally just said, we're going to fuse together common law and equity. We're going to call it civil law. And it's exactly what it is. It's civil law. Put us under statutes and imprisoned us. And that's the battle. And it's an important battle that we must win. We can't let this go. We have been sending quite a few papers to Trump and the team that he's been really mustered together to work, and other people that we see that are really battling for the people, individuals in Congress and some in the Senate. And we're trying to educate them, because unfortunately I do believe that they're as ignorant as many others in the courts concerning the common law. And people who have no law background at all can understand these things very quickly, become very obvious that it's that the common law is the law of the land, and that is the righteous thing, the just thing to have, and there's nothing more just than common law. These people who, again, were trained in civil law, they're just totally lost. I have a thing going with a judge right now I've been battling with, and I moved that into the Supreme Court, the New York State Supreme Court, that is. And if I get problems with the New York State Supreme Court, I'll move it into the federal court. Timing for me is on my side, because we're moving into another time period when we're going to be making them great. We've got to make our courts just again. We must make our courts just again. And so that's what we're pushing for diligently, to make our courts just again and get justice. And I do know that Trump has spoken about getting rid of all of the prosecutors on the federal level. I don't know what he's going to be doing with the judges. I hope that's the same case. I think I heard someone tell me not too long ago that he said the same thing about the judges, the federal judges. They all got to go. They have got to go. And I think a lot of them got to go to jail, in my opinion. They should be in jail. And they've destroyed so many lives, so many families. And so it just goes on and on and on. Someone's mic is open, by the way, and I'm getting feedback on their mic. So that may be you, Terry. I'm not sure. All right, so anyway, I do think justice is going to come. And I think sometime within the first few months. We've had a lot of people, a lot of cases that we have brought together underneath our case, which really we've been building a case against the federal judiciary since 2014. And so we have huge amounts of papers. We have hundreds of papers we filed into the courts. It falls on deaf ears, but we don't care. It's been served. They got it, and they've been informed. Now I think they are taking it serious. I do think that because, the main reason I think that is because we have not had our papers returned from the United States Supreme Court now, and it's got to be 2 months, over 8 weeks, and that gives us a lot of hope. We're not America if we don't have courts of justice. If we're not going to enforce the entire Constitution, not parts of the Constitution, but the entire Constitution, which requires courts of law and courts of equity. And I don't believe, I don't think that lawyers even understand the difference between a court of equity and a court of law. I just don't think they understand it. From any of my conversations I've had with lawyers, they just don't seem to understand it. So, and, well, Brent, I guess, is an exception, and I'm sure there are some other exceptions out there, but, you know. Anyway, I guess that's all I could say on that, Terry.
Okay. Next question. For those who are using NLA's Notice of Demand, Notice and Demand form for redress of grievances, in the event that the respondent defaults and the plaintiff sues, does that render the respond now defendant unable to rebut or dispute the suit, and that the plaintiff automatically prevails and is awarded damages without any objection from the opposing party or parties?
Well, a notice and demand is a normal function of due process. It's not used that often, I think, you know, mainly since civil law has really taken such precedence in all of our courts. I don't know if there is a court in America left that operates under as a court of a true court of justice. Anyway, a notice and demand is the beginning of really trying to repair the problem without having to go into the courts. But once the lawyers get a hold of that, they don't take any of that serious, and they say, ah, don't worry about it, that's nothing. These people are crazy. That's the attitude they have. I don't even know if they teach them about notices and demands, whether they really understand or realize that. But a notice and demand is the beginning of something, and that's what I would do in various situations. Start with a notice and demand, let them default, serve the default on them, and then at that point you would then take it in, move that into the court with a show cause on why a case shouldn't be ruled against them on your behalf. After all, they defaulted, they have not answered, they had a duty to answer. If it's, as long as it's specifically, you know, a government agency or something, then at that point they had a duty to answer. They didn't answer. They defaulted. Now, where the judge is going to go with that under their thinking, because they're out there to protect their own, you know, they'll probably just ignore it. But it is the beginning of a process, and that becomes part of the process to take up to the appellate level, and eventually, if necessary, and you can get into the Supreme Court, into the Supreme Court level. That's all we could do at this point, and I do think at some point it's going to have some value. I think, and again, the key thing is education. You know, as Jefferson said, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. People are so ignorant of our courts, and I'm talking about people who are working and living in those courts. Even all of our people are elected people, and I think I even put Trump into this point also, because I haven't heard anything that really gives me thinking or belief that he understands the problems in the courts as far as due process is concerned, as far as applying statutes upon the people. And this is alien to them. It's been a long, long time before courts have ruled in a common law court that statutes cannot be applied upon the people. We do have lots of court rulings in the past that lay that out pretty clear. I mean, I use them all the time in the cases we write, and you know, and all of our cases are filed up on National Liberty Alliance so that people can go up there and take a look at those cases and cut and paste anything they want and use them. You know, we have a lot of Supreme Court rulings that will support you. I have a paper I filed in the court with this lower court concerning my right of due process and laid out the the power and the authority of due process being through the common law, because without common law there is no justice. You know, once you have statutes, it's a fixed situation. You know, every case is just ruled on in the same way, and they just apply it. And of course, they make these things, you know, to really benefit themselves. But again, time's going to tell what's going to go on. But for anybody that's in trouble, anybody that's not in trouble, anybody that doesn't have a problem, even when you get onto the other side, look, at you're in trouble, or you're really in a bad situation if you don't have the knowledge of how the court system works, and that you cannot, and you need to be able to go in and take control of that court system. If we have courts of justice, then you can win any case that is righteous. And in most cases, I know of so many cases that are lost, or being people are being abused, and they're all righteous cases from the standpoint of the people that are trying to apply the law to get justice. But it's difficult to get. All right. Harry?
Okay, yeah, I'm working on it. It takes me a while to get back up and unmute myself. Sorry. In the NLA newsletter mailed to all members, I have noticed in some of the news article links that there is discussion about the upcoming Trump administration and Congress's plan to benefit gun owners and supporters. That is all well and good, but looking closely at it, it seems like it is just reinventing the wheel. All of those proposals, I believe, are good with good intent, but all of the targeted items are already constitutionally null and void. Why not save all the legislative... This is the question part, and it's four lines long.
Yeah, but they refer to something up on the website. Do you know what they're talking about?
No, I don't. I haven't been able to find it. They were talking about something in the newsletter that was sent out yesterday and other days.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Why not save all the legislative effort and just inform the people of their sovereignty, and that statutes, especially from foreign D.C., and even the 50 states, never had any jurisdiction over them, and any jurisdiction in the several 50 states of the Union is extremely limited to interstate commerce, such as FFL dealers and licensed manufacturers, not the people.
So I missed that... the point.
Why not save all the legislative effort and just inform the people of their sovereignty and statutes, especially from foreign D.C. and even the 50 states, never had any jurisdiction. So the statutes never had any jurisdiction over them. And any jurisdiction in several states of the Union is extremely limited to interstate commerce, such as FFL dealers and licensed manufacturers.
Well,
it's two questions combined together.
Well, this is what the National Liberty Alliance is all about, and they've been trying to do for a long time. But it's up to the people to take in that education, and start to do their duty to have government by consent. You know, it is so unfortunate. It's very sad that people are not that interested in having government by consent. They say they do, but then they don't get up to do nothing. You know, I've noticed this for a very long time, even long before I got involved here. You know, people want things, but they don't want to get up to take those things and spend the time in order to bring those things. I can guarantee you, absolute, if you had 100 to 200 people in every county in a committee of safety, we would take this nation in a moment. No problem. We would take it back quickly. No matter what they do, it didn't matter, because we could come together as far as fighting in the courts and fighting in whatever it is, and we can start getting rid of people that are in power by just enforcing the laws that exist. And they'll resist that, of course, but they can't resist the power of the people at a certain level, especially people who are educated, understand the system, and start filing papers and bringing these people to task. And that's what we're trying to teach the people to do. You know, it's hard to get the people. You know, I just recently sent out a letter. An email, you know, an email through the whole group. We have, I don't know, how many people do we have? Let me see. Do you remember the last, how many people we have in membership at the moment? Let me take a look on the website.
Mid 12,000.
No, it's 11,626.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so anyway, we got 11,626, and only a handful of people support what we're doing. And we've been out here for a long time, but we're out here every single Monday. We don't miss it at all. I mean, if Christmas falls on, or New Year's falls on a Monday, you know, we wouldn't have a meeting. You know, those are the only times I think we missed. I've been sick a few times, but Gerard, we've been here for that. I had maybe once or twice over the years, maybe three times, where lost internet connection or a storm, couldn't get on. But I think, you know, I think the meetings kept going anyway. You know, Gerard would pick up on it, or someone. But the thing is we're here 2 hours. We used to be here 3 hours, okay? But we're here 2 hours every week in an open forum. I've laid it out in an email that I sent out most recently. Of all the courses we've given, we teach people how to have government by consent. You know, I've written, I don't even know how many books I've written, 8 books. I got another one I'm getting ready to publish soon. But I've written a 550-page government by consent book. It's a law book, 8.5 by 11. It's a full-size book, hardcover, and it gets into the law. Okay, it gets into government by consent, how we can have government by consent, the things people should know. You know, no one's expected to memorize and know everything in that book, but generally speaking, you know, like any other knowledge we have, you know, we read and we attain a lot of the conclusions and some of the knowledge that we get out of these books or whatever it is we're looking into. Court Access in the Common Law, another book, 550 pages, 8.5 by 11, hardcover, out there. It's dirt cheap, $39.95. You know, these books, you go out on the internet and you go into looking at the books, the price of books, especially law books, you're talking hundreds of dollars to buy a law book. These are law books, okay, $39.95. And we're teaching the common law and laying out all of the things our founding fathers have laid together. Plus, I've written 7 handbooks. Actually, I've written, I got one other I've been trying to get, I stopped trying to get it published because they're telling me that someone else has published that book. I know they couldn't have because that book, personally wrote, and it hasn't been put up on the internet in a PDF download. So, but that's something I got to deal with. I just haven't had the time to fight them on that. So I actually wrote another one, and I've been in the middle of writing another book, hopefully finishing in another week or two. Maybe three, I don't know, but hopefully soon. And again, it's going to be another, I think it's going to be close to 500 pages, if not more. And again, it's going to be 8.5 by 11. You know, it's a 11 font, I think I used, through the book. So there's a lot of information in here. So education is what we do. But it's up to the people to get educated. It's up to the people to respond and do what has to be done. You know, again, I get back to the membership and, you know, I sent out an email asking for money because things are really tight and hard. Everything's become so expensive. You know, we've filed so many papers and, you know, we spent a lot of money on just paper and toner and mailings and servings and lots and tons of money. You know, we're stuck at a hard time right now trying to keep afloat. And we did get a reasonably good response in the sense that we had maybe, I don't know, maybe 15 people. I don't know that it was much more than that. Definitely under 20 people. And they responded with a decent amount of money. We collected a couple of $1,000s. So, but we have 11,600 members. You know, if we can get everyone to give $5 a month, just think, 11,000 members, just half of that. Let's think 5,000 members. We get $5 a month. Let's see what that would be. Let's take 5,000 people times $5 a month. That's $25,000 a month. If we were able to pull something like that, we would be professional. We would be paying people to work full-time jobs here at National Liberty Alliance and get some real serious work done. You know, you know, I'm the only full-time person here, but we do have a lot of volunteers that put quite a bit of time in it. I don't know how much time they put in, but from time to time, some of these people put in a full week's worth of work on things, and we're all volunteers, you know. So again, It's up to the people to do it. We have an education second to none. Anybody who can find a place on the internet or anywhere that's got a higher education, gives out more information, has written so many books, have a website that you couldn't get through it in a lifetime, and all the courses we've given, a lot of them are free. You know, the ones that aren't free, we ask for to become a premium member. Give us $5 a month. Support us. And so we have two different courses that you have to be a premium member to get into. And, you know, some people are really that far bad off that they can't even afford the $5 a month, but they desperately want to get into those courses. And we get it for free, you know, because we're not here to make money, though. But we need money to survive. That's the dirty part of the side. And I very rarely ask for money. But since the conversation had gone the way it went here, I just wanted to take that opportunity to let people know we need money. We need to go professional. Hopefully someone that's got real deep pockets will fall on our website one day and maybe throw us a big chunk of money to really get serious and get something going. I see a lot of different groups of people asking for money. They seem to get the money somehow, and they seem to be doing. They're nowhere near the work that we're going to do and that we are doing. Okay, so again, I do appreciate what that person's saying, but maybe they haven't been around long enough to know exactly what it is that NLA has been doing over the past since we really started hard on this around 2012, 2013, but 2014 is when we really started to file papers into the court. All right, next question. By the way, the queue is open, *6 and 1. If you're on a phone or if you're on an app or browser, should be a button to get into the queue.
Approximately 6 weeks ago, I can recall that you said that you had, I believe, about 15 cases and how there is a claim that we can join. I can't remember the name, but I know it started with an A, and you said we could join. Can you explain this as to what kind of case claims and how to join?
Well, you know, we had did a lot of work in various courts for people. We had set things up in a way that we can really kind of push things out, a lot of paperwork out, on foreclosures, for instance. You know, because helping someone with a foreclosure, you know, we already know the game plan and what's lawful and not lawful. And the papers we've written for that can be applied to all those cases. And by the way, all those papers for that is available also in the course, by the way. But available up online for free, you know, right under the federal court cases. You know, we have all of the different cases that we've applied, and we've taken them all up into the federal court. When they ignored or didn't do anything with them. We also did habeas corpuses. We did quite a few of them. Again, it was up to the individual that we're doing a habeas corpus for to have an ex-friend who would write an affidavit, and all the papers were really pretty much written out, and it was just a matter of applying, you know, the affidavit to it and filling in the necessary information and filing it to the court. Now, it really doesn't go anywhere because, like I said before, you know, in the very beginning we thought that we would have some success, but we just don't get a lot of success because these people are evil. They are not willing to let our court system go. They are not willing to allow us because they're making too much money at this. That's part of the thing. They break the law, they're protected. They don't have to worry about nothing because they're above the law from their perspective. No one's going to come file charges against them, you know. Because they are the ones that are the problems, the prosecutors, the judges, and the lawyers. They're the problems. They're the ones that, you know, they, again, a lot of these people I do believe belong in jail. You know, so anyway, we were doing a lot of cases a while back, and we got away from that because we really didn't have the manpower, and even though people were giving us some money in order to do it, we were asking for $100 for each case to cover the cost, you know, doing the printing of the papers and the ink and filing the papers, serving them, and then filing it into our courts. And then we moved over to, well, if anybody wants to kind of become a joinder to our case, put an affidavit in concerning their case. There's information on that in order to get involved. Let's see if I can find that real quick. Let me go back to the welcome page. I think I can find it quicker there. Yeah, I think this is here, stuck in an abusive court. I think this is it. Okay, you can fill out an apple. You can fill out a paper. We don't want your court case. Okay, we want just an affidavit concerning your court case, because we can't take all these cases into the courts. We don't have the people to do that. We don't have the funding to do that. You know, again, it just isn't there. But collectively, to put your affidavit referring back to your case, and then we will try to push for justice for those cases should be reopened for that purpose, you know, for whatever purpose it is that you're fighting for. You know, all we can do is try to get you into a court of justice. I do believe that people who have lost their homes through these non-judicial foreclosures, well, first of all, they've got a huge injury. The whole thing was done up on fraud. Any tax foreclosure on a house or any mortgage foreclosure on a house was unlawful, okay? And for every injury, you know, common law says, and that's why we've got to get back to the common law, for every injury, there must be a remedy. It's not that it would be nice to be a remedy. No, there must be a remedy. For every injury, you must be restored. And you cannot lose. A free man cannot lose his court. Okay, when you go into a court, you can't lose it. There's nothing they could do to throw you out. That case has got to go through. Okay, through its process, through its due process, to be heard by people, you know, a jury of your peers, and decided on what is right and just. A free people, a free and independent jury. Hard to find these days. A grand jury, you can get them to do anything because they're totally ignorant of the law. They have no clue what's going on. They fill out a paper. You get a psychological evaluation on each one of these people that fill out these applications, you know, these questionnaires that the courts put out. They know exactly where your political slant is at. They get a lot of information from those questions. It's a psychological thing there. And they put the right people in the right jury, you know. This is obviously it's a crime, okay? This is organized crime. That's what it is. Anyway, you can apply with us, but bottom line is this: we're trying to open the doors of justice, and once we get the doors of justice open, you can get your own case in there. But you do need to know due process. Go somewhere and get an education on due process. Figure out how the court system works. We have a court case. We have a court course. It's $125. It's a 90-hour course, and the course is available all the time. You can go as fast as you want on it, slow as you want, whatever you want. You can go, and 5 years from now, you can go up there. You can still have access. You can re-listen to the course, all the papers, the forms. It'll always be available to you, as long as NLA is on the web, okay. And that's up to the people to keep us there. You know, as long as we have a website up there, you'll have access to this stuff. And then, you know, everybody should learn it. It's a necessity that our children learn the law in school. By the time they come out of high school, they should have a college education. They should have an understanding of the law. They should know how the court system works. They should know how due process works. They should know their rights. They should know the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They should know all these things. They should know what their heritage is. You know, who our founding fathers were, what they believed. The fact that this is an absolute fact. We are a Christian nation. We are founded on Christian principles. We're founded on the Bible. The law comes from the Bible, and that's where common law comes from. Our government is structured going back, you know, into the Bible, into the Old Testament. We're structured just as Israel was structured. All of this, and yet people don't realize we're a Christian nation. And when you have a Christian nation, then the king of your court is Jesus Christ. It's God. God is the king of your court. And we rely on him, and it is up to the jury to understand that they are there to serve their creator. They are there to serve the king of the court. And the king of the court is all about justice. This is power. Knowing these things is power, okay? One or two people aren't going to get anywhere. 10 or 20 people aren't going to get away. We need people throughout the whole nation. And we're not talking, again, You know, if we get 100 people per county, I mean, that would be huge, okay? We have 3,134 counties, okay, times 100 people. That is 313,000 people out of 313 million people. We're over 300 million people. I don't know what the actual number is. But the thing is we're looking at about 300,000 people across America to totally take control of the courts, get justice, require and watch them, and make sure that we don't fall back into this problem again. But if the people are not willing to put a little of their time, you know, what are we asking for? You need to start a committee of safety. What's involved with that? 2 hours a month. You come to a meeting, one meeting a month, for 2 hours. And then, of course, the committee of safety has to be busy, so everybody gets a little bit of work to do over the course of those 30 days. So maybe another hour or two's worth of work. So 3-4 hours a month for liberty, to secure your liberty. You know, if people don't want to secure their liberty, then they don't deserve that liberty. If people don't want to know and understand their power and authority, because we, the people, are sovereign. We are the lawmakers. We wrote the Constitution. We, the people, ordained and established this Constitution. We told them what their powers were and what they can't do. We told them what our rights were, and they are not to violate those rights. Those rights are to be used as a ruler to apply upon anything that they do. If they violate any one of our rights, then that, whatever it is that they're doing, is null and void. And we have a lot more rights than what we read in the Bill of Rights. That's just the beginning of what right we have, a right to travel or a right to do whatever it is, as long as we don't injure another person. But people don't seem to want to learn. You know, there are people that do learn, but it's just, not enough of them. It's up to the people that come here to National Liberty Alliance meeting to bring people to this meeting. You know, let them know about what's going on here. Get them out to the website. Get them involved. Get a committee of safety going. Put 3 hours or 4 hours a week into that. You know, put a few dollars into your committees of safety. Give $5 a month to National Liberty Alliance. And let's do the work. But you can't have it without fighting for it, without taking it, and without exercising it. And if you were not, if that committees of safety are not there, they're not. No one's watching the government. And that's why they get away with what they're getting away with. We're the watchdogs, but we're not doing it. We need to do it. All right. Any other questions?
Last one. It says, request for assistance. Hello and happy holidays. Please provide a name and number for an NLA member involved in a constitutional assembly in Palm Beach County, Florida. An alternative would be to ask that person to call me at their earliest convenience. In the event NLA does not have a presence in Palm Beach County, would you extend this request to a neighboring county or even a state representative? And it has a name and a number, and of course his email address.
Well, again, we get back to some depression again, and you know, we can only look, we do what we got to do. Nothing's going to stop me from doing what I'm doing. I'm going to continue until I can't do it anymore, to educate people, to bring what I can. We have a lot of volunteers, not a lot, but we have volunteers. You know, we have national leadership. What do we have, about a dozen people in national leadership? Or do you know, Terry? I'm not sure how.
I'd say it's closer to 15, but that's a guess.
All right, so we have maybe 15 people on the national level, but not, they're all volunteers. And, you know, so look, at if you go out to, go to our directory. Okay, click on the directory tab. And you'll come down here and you'll see district leaders, and you know, you can try to make contact with them. I know some people don't respond, and hopefully we can get people more active on that. We need volunteers, by the way. Anybody want to volunteer? But you can go to, for instance, what did they say? That was Florida, right? I think they said Florida.
Yeah, they said Florida.
Yeah, so you can click on Florida. In Florida, we have 941 members. We have 67, you know, we work diligently, very hard to get the counties really involved, that we had people in the counties call a meeting and agree that you know, we need to work with, particularly we're focusing in on juries, grand juries particularly, but also you know, getting things going in the courts. So we did have a lot of activity. It was still a small group of people working across the country to get this done. So we formed, you know, Unified United States. Well, we formed a common law grand jury in every county, and the counties came together and the states formed. Well, we didn't do it in every county. The counties came together and we formed a unified state common law grand jury, whether it's Florida or whatever the state may be. And then the states came together and we formed the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And, of course, that's where we've been doing the work from that perspective here at National Liberty Alliance. Now, none of the state grand juries are active. We never pushed for that. We didn't want to get chaos, and it's hard to control people to keep them focused. But we did have decent people that put this together, and the work has to be done. From, you know, we can turn and say we're established in every county, we're established in every state. We formed this Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury by doing it in every state to come together as one. And we filed indictments, and all the papers we filed under that name, okay? But generally speaking, the people at the state level, I'm sure there are some that may be educated enough to be able to do things, but a lot of people, there's a lot of bad information out there, and a lot of people run with a lot of bad information. And so we really hope that people who get involved with us really work diligently in their education if they're going to do something, you know, like create a grand jury and work to do what we're doing at the national level and a state level or even a county level. But you have to be educated. It's a wrongdoing to not have a proper education and to go into the courts and try to do things, and you're doing things wrong. People believe things that are not true. I hear it all the time. And again, you know, I've done the research in this, and you read the books, it's full of footnotes. It tells you every place where we get our information. You read the court papers, same thing, filled with footnotes, our memorandums, footnotes. 90% of what I write is not my writing. I just sew things together of what the United States Supreme Court said, what our founding fathers said, what the law is, you know. And so we have solid information. We're not error-free. I'm sure we have some errors here or there, and when we find an error, we correct it. But some people are running with bad errors, and it's very dangerous, you know. Nothing more dangerous than ignorance and action. So if people are serious, you know, we could do a lot more work, and people get a real good education and really come to understand. You know, we could do a lot more work. I'm going to be meeting with a law group here in my county soon, and it's a group of people that have been involved in the common law. They've been meeting for a long time. They're part of a group that I went and gave a presentation to, the CREATE Committee of Safety, and I'm going to be meeting with them. You know, personally, there's, I think, I don't even know how many people involved, 8 or 10, maybe 12. I really don't know how many people, but it's a small group, but it's pretty big, really, when you think about it. So hopefully, you know, I'm going to sit and talk with them, and hopefully we're going to, I know that they got a lot of error that they don't realize, okay? And so I got to be careful, of course, you know, but I'll bring facts in. I'll bring court cases in. I'll bring founding fathers in, you know, the Constitution. And then there's conclusionary things that you have to have that you can't really make a good conclusion on unless you have enough knowledge, okay, to be able to make those conclusions correctly. And, you know, I think of over the years how I have, you know, grown as time goes on. You become more and more knowledge. You learn something every day. You know, I'm researching every day. I'm reading every day. I'm studying every day. And so I've accumulated a lot of knowledge. You know, and I look back, and when you have conclusionary points though as you go, and especially when you make your arguments, you know, if you read our papers, you'll see what I'm talking about. So you have these conclusionary things, and they're rock solid, okay? But sometimes your conclusionary things is because there's still a little bit of information that you missed, and they may not be correct. And then you got to go back and tweak. You can't repair the work behind. It's difficult to do that, but you can make the correction. You know, the Bible says correction is grievous to those who have forsaken the way. We have to make the correction, and we do, because who wants to have error in trying to win a case or whatever it is? And, you know, but, you know, are people willing to take that error, that correction? A lot of things, you know, there's some really strong information out there, there's man on the land stuff, that people just don't understand. It's not the right way to go. There's so many, we just have to go into the real law, the common law, get into our Constitution, get into our Bill of Rights, get into our Founding Fathers' statements and conversations, get into the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers, understand the depthness of the law, which is the common law. And common law is really very simple, ultimately. You see, because common law comes from the heart, you know. God has put in us his law, put his law into our hearts. We know a right from wrong, you know. That's why we, the jury, is the best thing to make a decision in a court, because you're coming from the heart. You're listening to the facts, and you're applying what is right and just. And when you have 12 people making that decision, you know, it helps guide the other 11, you know, so to speak, from the one or the three to the others, and so on and so forth. The point is, a jury discusses things, relooks at things, regurgitates things, comes up and reconsiders things, and applies, common sense, because common law is nothing more difficult than common sense. That's it. It's nothing. Common sense, and to do that which is right and just, and everybody could know that. A very small percentage of the people may not know that because maybe they have some psychological problems. But the bottom line is, generally speaking, common sense should be there. But we have lost our common sense because we've been filled with uncommon sense. And we've been making thoughts and things and thinking off of those uncommon sense things. You know, things that are not necessarily right. Things that they tell us is right. And they've been driving it to these ideas or these thoughts, whether we realize it or not, through our schools and our entertainment and music and political conversations. I mean, my goodness, what does it take to wake the people up to know that we're a republic and the last thing we are is a democracy? Democracy, as Benjamin Franklin put it, is two wolves and a lamb deciding on what's for dinner. Okay, that's what democracy is. Our Founding Fathers, I think it's Federalist Paper number 9 or 10, the whole paper was really on the destruction of a democracy. We cannot be a democracy. It's destructive. They said that they never saw a democracy that didn't commit self-murder at some point in time. It always becomes destructive. It's 51% against the 49. Okay? And yet, we can't get this knowledge to the people. I mean, and to the people that are in charge of our nation, the people we put in into different political positions to make law or to administrate the process, and we can't find people that don't know that we are a republic and that we're not a democracy. A democracy is repugnant to the common law. Now, again, this is what National Liberty Alliance is trying to teach people. We have gotten our message out to Trump and his team. I think it's about 30 people we've been sending information to, educating them, real education, giving them, letting them know where these facts are being found and how we have this knowledge. We are a Christian nation, founding on Christian principles. We're not under civil law. Civil law is an abomination to common law. It's an abomination. Judges should never, there's no way a judge should ever make a ruling on an individual. No way. Only administrative courts. That's all. And that's not criminal courts. Yeah.
I think we've gotten away from the answer.
I know. I got on to.
I think you're absolutely right.
That had to get out. So.
I understand. And the inauguration is 3 weeks away. And that's all, the end of the questions.
Okay. All right. Well, anyway, we got a couple of people in the queue, so we'll take some questions, have a conversation, hopefully. Anybody else wants to get into the queue, again, *601 if you're on a phone, and app browser should be a button. Okay, we'll take our first question here from Indiana, it looks like. I think it's Marianne from Indiana. Let's see. Did it open? Hang on a minute. I don't think it took. No, let me try again. If you get kicked out, come back in, but let's see. Okay, you've been unmuted.
Hi there, John.
How you doing?
Good evening. All right. I sent a request to Hillsdale. I'm asking them about their classical training and whether or not it has a practical application to it. I'm working my way into to go a little bit deeper to get them to think more deeply on an application level for common law application, because I know they teach about the online courses and so on for the Constitution, but I'm not seeing an application piece. So I'm working on it. It might take a little bit of back and forth, especially the holidays here. But I have a question for you, John. And
before you have the question, I'd like to say something about Hillsdale.
Sure.
You know, Hillsdale is a pretty good college institution, I guess you'd say, and they do a lot of training and different things and due process in the court system. But they're very, very weak in the common law, extremely weak. The president of Hillsdale is a highly educated individual, a very well-read individual. And he's interesting to listen to in his speeches, and so they have all that. But one thing they lack is the fact that we, and I do believe that they know we're a Christian nation, but they still hold to the democracy to as best that I can see. And they still don't put the common law above the civil law and say, hey, civil law is repugnant to the Constitution, stop it. They don't do that. And I'm depressed that they don't do that. And that is, but nevertheless, they can give you a reasonably good education, at least for process, but I don't think you're going to get anything for common law. But next, go to your question now.
But I think you could write a letter. Just so you, he studied heavily in England, so I think there's that influence.
Well, they had the Magna Carta, and that was the beginning of the whole thing. We are built upon the Magna Carta ourselves.
So yeah, but when you start getting in, but what's really popular though is the whole barrister and the bar, and
right, that's
a completely different story. I mean, that's where we really went off the rails. I agree.
Well, you know what? I might take my books and just send it to them. I forget the name of the president. But in any event, I might send him a copy of the books. Maybe he'll read them, and maybe it'll kind of wake him up. You know? Sorry, go ahead, Terry.
Larry Arn, Dr. Larry Arn.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, brilliant man, definitely a brilliant man. And it doesn't, I encourage you, if you would do that, is send your book. And you know, let me know when you do.
I'm writing another book, and once I get that book done, then I'll send them my three major books, because I'll have the Government by Consent book, Court Access and the Common Law, and then the new book, which I don't want to reveal yet until I get it published. And I'm going to hopefully publish it in the next couple of weeks. You know, Amazon is great for that. I went through a publisher, and that was a nightmare. And years, 2 years to get my book published. I go to Amazon, I write the book, go up there, and in a day I get it up there, and it's online, being sold. In one day. It depends on how long it takes me to get it up there, you know. In the beginning, it took maybe, the first book I put up there, it took me maybe a week to figure things out, to be able to get it up there in a proper way, proper format and everything. And then the next book, a lot quicker, you know. I actually literally done my next big book in one day, and a bunch of little books I done in one day. But it does. There's a learning, part that you have to go through to figure out, you know, the proper formats, how things work. You know, even with Word, there's a little tricky things in Microsoft Word that, you know, it kind of needs tweaking. But there's a way to fix some of these problems in the settings that I wasn't aware of, and now I'm becoming to learn so I can get it out quicker. But anyway. Once I get that book done, which is in the next couple of weeks, I'll send them all three books, and maybe I'll send them a copy of the handbooks too, and see once how they respond to it. Maybe we'll get somewhere. You know, I've sent information to Tom Fenton, And what's the name of his organization again, Terry, do you remember?
Judicial Watch.
Judicial Watch, okay. Yeah, I sent him, I've been sending him information along with Trump and others. I haven't heard any response back from them. But, you know, we got the information out. I've communicated with them 3 times already. We're going to communicate some more. But trying to wake people up.
Yeah, they have a lot going on. And I do want to ask you, John, I see here that there is a U.S. District Court from the Northern District of New York case. And John Vidurk, is that you?
Yeah, that's my real
name. Okay. So Durash is a pen name?
Yeah, I've been John Durash since, let me think, when I went online, I think it was 1990. I got my first computer in 1989, and I got online in 1990. So, yeah, John Durash ever since online.
Okay, and NLA has been around for how many years?
We've been under different names prior to National Liberty Alliance. We were New York committeemen is one of the first things. I mean, I've been building a website for a long time just to be out there for educational purposes. But then when we started to get active, I think it was in a way that we formed and got people together here in New York, and we formed the New York committeemen, which we were really pursuing the statutory process, which we didn't realize was not really the right way to go, but it's an education. And we put up information, and we were trying to bring the parties back under the law and get them, you know, really... to realize we're a republic and so on and so forth. So anyway, I'm trying to think. I think it was 2008 we had the New York committeemen. We then changed it to New York. We have New York Liberty Alliance we went to, and that's when we started to get into the grand jury and into the court system. And that probably was around, I'm thinking, 2010, 2011, somewhere around there. And then we became National Liberty Alliance not long after that, because we were getting people coming to our meetings and so on from other places, and I encouraged them to try to set up a site like we have, and I realize it's a big task to do that, so we just went to realize, let's go national. So we became National Liberty Alliance, I think, around maybe 2011, somewhere around there. And we've been building ever since then under that name.
Okay, and you started doing the Monday calls, would you say?
Very beginning. We've been doing Monday calls since 2009, maybe.
Oh, okay, even when you were under...
New York committeeman. Yep.
Okay. All right, Monday calls. Yeah, I just want to be sure because... Yeah,
and I've been doing open forums going back to 1990, as a matter of fact, when I got online with my computer, and then I got connected with a lot of people who were students of the Bible, serious students of the Bible, and having good conversations with them and going to different events in the summer, and we formed open forums 1990, maybe 91. And so I've been doing open forums for that long. You know, back then it was on the Bible, though.
Marianne, can I say one thing, John?
Yeah, go ahead.
I wrote to Hillsdale College, and they completely ignore me. So whatever you do, back it up with facts and shoot for the top and, you know, back it all up. And then come back with them. If they don't answer, come back with them.
Yeah, because I am I have been a member of their imprimis for at least a decade. And I used to give, and I'm in the Constitution class, online courses. So yeah, just moving along with that. I mean, it's good. It's very informative. But I just...
You get a lot of good information, good constitutional information, due process, but you don't get the common law backbone to it. That's the big problem. I haven't seen the common law backbone anywhere.
Yeah, it's really fascinating, John, because one, it took me a while, it took months, if not years, for me to like reorient, because we're so stuck, because we've never been, I don't think we've ever really, in our lifetime, we haven't really been a constitutional republic.
Absolutely, correct.
So when what that means, it's very different from what we're experiencing now. I mean, and I look forward to it coming, because I think even President Trump, I think Trump is even figuring it. Like, because when you talk about the issues, it is so obvious that the bar is a problem. The corruption is so bad, top down in the bar. I mean, you have your one-offs, you have your America First legal, which I do believe should be, like, we should eradicate the bar, and America First legal should be the law practice in the United States, because the bar is not America First. And or constitutional republic first. But we're graduating at 18 years old, and you're supposed to be an adult. And these kids have no idea what they're doing. Like, they don't even know what their rights are. Like, they have no idea. They're in that, it's like a tailspin. So if you get out of school and they're just in a tailspin, because they've been institutionalized through the school programs. And now they're set free to be, oh, here you go, now you're an adult, and now you're on your own, and they have no idea what they're doing. And we're not training adults. We're not training adults. We are training institutionalized. And it's like what Jefferson was saying. It's like he was afraid to free his slaves because they're just going to get chewed up and spit out by...
Well, he couldn't free his slaves because he couldn't emancipate them. They were illegal to emancipate them in Virginia. As a matter of fact, he was a very young man. I think he was in his 20s when he first became a legislator. And he was a legislator twice. He was called to be a legislator twice in Virginia and governor once. And in each case, he tried to change the law, because the law at that time in Virginia prevented people from freeing their slaves. So he refused to sell them. And by the way, Jefferson had never bought a slave in his life. He inherited his slaves from his parents, his father, okay? And so he grew up in that. He says some of his first memories was being in the hands, in the arms of slaves. He had relationship with them like grandparents or something, aunts and uncles, whatever. And then when his wife died, he got a lot of those slaves, of course. So he had a lot of slaves, but he never bought one, and he refused to sell them, and he tried to free them. And that was a major problem. But anyway, twice, and look at the Declaration of Independence, all men are created equal. And look at what he talked about the king. You robbed people, you stole them, and you enslaved them and sold them, you know, to the king, you know. So people don't realize who Jefferson really was and that where his heart was. And our founding fathers knew that it was going to take time. Things were set, the stage was set in the future, that eventually the slave problem would be dealt with. And Lincoln took that up, and he dealt with it. And he really believed, you know, he wrote a lot about our founding fathers, how the stage was set for him, and that he felt it was his duty, that he was his calling. And he believed that he was going to die for it, and he did. You know, very interesting.
I do have another comment. During the holidays, you get together with friends and so on, and I brought up the Thomas Jefferson and how it was really his nephew who was involved with one of the slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Uh, had a relationship, intimate relationship, and correct. he was saying that apparently there's record in Paris from mm-hmm. when he visited and brought this the female slave with him, and there was
Thomas Jefferson.
Thomas Jefferson, yeah.
Well, I can tell you that's a lie from hell. There is so much. Look, there is a book out there called The Real Thomas Jefferson, put out by NCCS. And mm-hmm. it's nccs.net. You can get this book. It's very cheap. They only, you know, if you buy a bunch of, three or four of the different books and stuff, you get them like $5-6 a piece, I think. They're pretty cheap. But they're very cheap. But there's a book called The Real Thomas Jefferson. And there's also a book called The Real Benjamin Franklin and The Real George Washington. And you can buy these books as a group of books for, like I said, only a few bucks a piece. And when you go through this book, it really is put together on history, conversations, interviews of the time, news things, what was going on, letters back and forth. Our founding fathers did a lot of writing, okay? And when you go through this stuff and you see what was going on, Thomas Jefferson was a very pious man, being as far as being a Christian is concerned. You get the book, it's just amazing, amazing. But all my research, the real stuff, I have never seen anything that laid anything out other than people today say this, because that's what the enemy does. Look, if you want to destroy the heart of America, you got to destroy Thomas Jefferson. You know, he is behind it all. He's behind the Bill of Rights. He was behind the Constitution. He was the author of the Declaration of Independence. He was the one that our founding, all our founding fathers turned to be the writer. He happened to be out of the country at the time when the debate was going on, but he was had a very strong relationship with Madison. And Madison, him and Madison were like bookends, okay? Both of them highly educated. Madison was really mentored by Jefferson. I'm sure he was mentored by a lot of people, but Jefferson was a mentor to Madison. But Madison, very quickly, because of his background and education and his mentoring from other individuals, he became his equal very quick. And so they were like bookends in a sense. And when you go through and see the work that he put together in the Federalist, and especially the Anti-Federalist, you could just read Jefferson all over the place. If you've been studying Jefferson, you see him everywhere there, even though there's nothing recorded that he said anything. But they weren't. That was the point.
Oh, and there's a... I don't know if you heard this book. It's called The Jeffersonians. It's fairly new. And I saw that book last year, I think it was. I stayed at a home with somebody in Hillsdale, and I zoned right into it. It was on their bookshelf, and I'm like, what's that book? And I started reading it. And so it's fairly new. It's called The Jeffersonians, and it talks about Jefferson's influence on Monroe and Madison. And it's so awesome. It's very it's very detailed and very well.
They were uniquely qualified individuals, so many of them, that came together in the same time period, in the same location, being here in the colonies, to be able to put together and build what we have. And and there were so many of them. We have the major ones that we talk about a lot, Washington and Madison and Adams and Jefferson and Franklin. But there are a lot more, and they built this nation. And it could never have been done before or after. You know, even today, when we look, you talked a little bit about Trump. You know, Trump was uniquely qualified. Totally, he was, Paul the Apostle, okay, was uniquely qualified for the job that he had, which was to bring the gospel to the Gentiles. That was his job, and he was uniquely qualified, okay? You know, he was a Roman citizen. He was a Pharisee. He was a pious Jew. He was a high-ranking individual in the army, I guess you'd say back then, and he had the power to take life, and he did. You know, he took life, and he was killing Christians. Of course, that was the big thing. Of course, we read about in the Bible. But he was uniquely qualified when God knocked him off his high horse and told them who he was, that he was Jesus, that was God, the God's name. And but Trump, kind of in the same thing, in the sense, not like Paul in that way, but he's uniquely qualified in the sense that he knows the financial systems. He knows all of the players, all of the billionaires. He's in a lot of their clubs, and but he's really in for the people, and he's always been involved with the people. You go back into the 80s and the 90s, well, we'd always from time to time see him on TV, and he'd play a lot of those films from back then of his thinking about the problems with the, you know, the country here and the political, all these political animals and stuff. And nothing has changed. He's saying the same thing he was saying 40 years ago, you know. So he's uniquely qualified for the job that he's got. I don't know if there's anyone in this planet that is uniquely qualified like him to be able to do what he is doing right now. But you also have his vice president now, which I think he's being groomed very well, and he's a pretty interesting individual also. I was kind of weary of him, never heard of him, but all I had to do was listen to him talk, and I knew this guy, he's got it. And so if anything happens to Trump, I think he's uniquely qualified to carry on where he's going on with it, you know, with his plan. But anyway, one of the weaknesses, there are two weaknesses I see with Trump. One of them was I always see him as a weak Christian, okay? But lately he's been talking a lot, so maybe he's come around. It's important to have a Christian perspective at the level of things that he's doing and where he's at. The other thing he's weak in, I believe, is in the common law itself. In the Constitution, he's got a pretty good grip on it, but the real fact of the matter of understanding that we, the people, are the lawmakers. We make the law. They do not make the law for us. We made the law for them. They have nothing to say. No judge or nobody that makes any kind of a decision in a common law court case can do that. I mean, it's the people that decide. It's the people that decide whether they want to indict someone or not. It's the people decide whether the law is that they're trying to apply upon someone is right and just, or whatever the charges may be. It's the people have the power of nullification when you have a case where statutes can be brought in. You know, for instance, someone that's working in commercial activities, statutes can be applied upon them. Anybody working government agencies and they're brought into a court of law, statutes can be applied upon them because they agreed to operate under those statutes, under those conditions. And that being the case, statutes can be applied upon them, but they can't be applied upon us because we have no agreement. We're not doing anything special that puts us under that authority. And where did they get that authority to write those statutes? They got them from us. Article 1, Section 8. We gave them 18 powers to legislate. And so, when a judge gets into a court and makes a decision and puts forth a penalty, they don't have that power. They don't have that authority. Now, it seems that none of Trump's lawyers understand that. Because all these courts were unlawful, every one of them. And even when there was a jury, they were stacked. It's clear as a bell. Okay, all you had to do is go talk to the juries themselves to see where they were coming from. But all you have to do is look at the questionnaires that were given and the backgrounds of the people that were put on that jury. I mean, the judge actually broke the jury up, that I heard anyway. They broke the jury up into different small groups saying, you guys decide on this problem, you guys decide on that, and you guys decide on this. I mean, what the heck is that? You know, then they, of course, the judge can say that it's a stuck jury. It's a what do they call that again? A hung jury. And what's a hung jury? Well, they can't come to a conclusion. Well, where'd they get that phrase hung jury? That doesn't mean anything. Go back and decide. You guys can't decide, then you're gonna have to agree on something. Obviously, you're gonna have to agree on letting the guy go. You know, because you can't leave that room till that job is done. Okay. Or you get a judge that says the jury overturns the jury. That all these things are not possible in common law. People are the final word. We have a higher saying than the United States Supreme Court. Just think about that. But it's not being applied, okay? The United States Supreme Court has no authority to make any decisions on the issues. They can only make decisions on the law that is before them concerning, you know, again, we're dealing with commercial activities and government activities. That's where they're at. And those cannot be criminal, because once a criminal action is taken against an individual on those levels, then that becomes a court of law, and a judge goes away, and a magistrate comes in for the sole purpose of sealing and executing the decision of a jury. But people don't know these. If only we all knew these things and executed them.
Yeah.
It's stoppable.
Yeah,
it wouldn't be getting away with anything.
Well, the jury selection has become an AI thing where you can kind of like, they can manipulate. They call it wheel within wheel, like the wheel within wheel. Therefore, they select the pool from according to specific criteria for if they wanted to be.
They use the questionnaires to do that. They've been doing that for as long as I've been alive.
They have more than questionnaires now.
Huh? What was that?
Oh, they have more than questionnaires now. They can.
They have access to
every single thing about that person.
Yeah,
about everyone.
I see that. You're right. I wouldn't disagree with that. You know, the other thing is you know, when you go into a court, what you talk about the wheel, you know, the judge is next turn to go into that case. They don't look at the case, what it's about, who's coming in, but a judge is put onto that case automatically without anybody supposed to knowing or making that decision. It's just the next one on the wheel. But I always found that every time I go into court and I get a judge within the first hearing, they change the judge. They put a new judge in. And I found that there's been a couple of cases where someone else whose papers I was working on got the same judge as I got. You know, I refer to them as the fixers, the ones that's not afraid to get out there and really break the law. I guess they're getting paid enough to do it. You know? It's really a sham.
Can I say one thing again?
Yeah.
If we are the sovereign, which it says that we are, you know, we have one sovereign, and
it's God.
God. If we are the sovereign over our country, then it is our duty to make decisions. That's why you have a jury of your peers.
Amen.
They have the responsibility to make the decision whether the law is good and whether the person is guilty. And also, I wanted to add back to Thomas Jefferson. I couldn't squeeze it in. But if you go to wallbuilders.com, David Barton wrote The Jefferson Lies about 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago, something like that. And it deals with all those lies. So wallbuilders.com, The Jefferson Lies, David Barton.
Yeah. I read that one as well, and I own the real Thomas Jefferson. And anybody who does not have that book is so amazing. It has like the first half of the book is the story of his life and how he created this writing desk where he could write make his own copies. He could write two at a time, multiple. He wrote so much.
I'll give you one more though, Oliver DeMille. And the book is The Thomas Jefferson Education, A Thomas Jefferson Education.
Well, like I said, if you want to destroy our courts, you want to destroy who we are as a people, you have to destroy Thomas Jefferson. He is the big focus. You know, Samuel Adams said, let me read this, the natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth and not to be under the will or legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. Okay, and our founding fathers built our nation and our founding papers on this. So again, people don't understand their powers and authority. You know, I was amazed when I started learning these things because I was so ignorant to this stuff, and I it was so empowering, you know. And if we get enough people empowered like that, we can never falter again.
Totally
but we pass it on to our children.
And what was the quote? Who made the quote? Was that a Jefferson quote? The one that you made?
Samuel Adams.
Okay. Oh, yeah. That doesn't sound Jefferson. But, okay. Yeah.
All right, maybe we should. We only have one other person in the queue, but maybe we should move over to them. And we'll keep your mic open if you want to pipe in. Okay.
One more, since y'all are offering one. Jefferson books up. Dumas Malone, Jefferson and His Time, 6 volumes. I've got it actually, but I haven't read it. But it comes on pretty good recommendation from someone that we know here at NLA. Anyway, Dumas Malone, Jefferson and His Time, published in 1948, supposed to be outstanding, and I yield.
Okay. You know, here's another quote. Edmund Burke, all that is necessary for the triumph of evil is that good men do nothing. It's all that's necessary. Evil will take over. And that's where we're at. That's why we are where we are. And to some degree, maybe it's not our fault, because we did drop the ball. But they've been working at us psychologically since we've been born and trying to destroy what our founding fathers had given us. Okay, I'm gonna let you stay with an open mic. Mute your mic, Marianne, if you want to pipe in. But we have another person. I see the name Romeo. I'm not sure what state you're from. Let me just unmute you. So you have both mics. Go ahead. What's your first name and your state? It's a Gmail address we see up there. And I see the name. It looks like Romero. The mic
Romero,
is open.
Marisol Romero.
Yep, that's what it looks like. All right, well, anyway, the mic's open. If they come back, they can pipe in. I don't know. Do you have anything else, Marianne? Eric or anybody?
Since we have Marianne here, there is something that I still have. I think I differ with you on this one, John, and again, it's about homeowners associations. So in the common law, and Marianne, she's been a part of this discussion in the past, in the common law, you have unalienable rights. So the rights that come directly from our Creator. So you can't lose them. You can't sell them. You can't have them taken from you, not lawfully. So enter in a homeowners association who, let's just say you buy a house and on some land, and it's the only, let's just say you wanted this land, it's where you want to raise your family, but there's a homeowners association, and they tell you that you can't have chickens or roosters in accord to the homeowners association, and you agreed to that when you bought the land. Actually, they had a clause in their homeowners association agreement with you, and it said these laws are all these statutes are all applicable to you, the ones that are at least lawful. They have that in there, actually. And I'm just saying this as an example. And I've seen some of these homeowners association agreements. Well, what if it comes to the point where, you know, they've destroyed our food supply, and now you need roosters and chickens to be able to survive? Do they still get to take away your right to live?
Well, Yeah, I'll give you some thoughts on some of this. You know, first of all, they did enter into an agreement. So an agreement, people can contract anything they want. But there are things that are what's called unlawful things. I remember when I first went into business and I got my first real big job, I went and got a lawyer, take a look at the contract and work things out. And boy, he shut down a whole bunch of stuff. They can't bring this in, you know. And in the cases of you going into a place where you have some agreement on a piece of land, okay, certain things can be done or can't be done, there is a problem with that because there's no real true meeting of the mind, okay? There's got to be a negotiation. one size doesn't fit all. So that becomes a kind of a fault in that whole program. But I do understand how people sometimes want to have a community and they want to make sure that certain things don't happen or can't happen, or they don't want, they want everybody to have their grass cut and different things like that, maybe, whatever the case may be. Okay. And I understand that that desire, but I think it's a difficult thing to work, because to prove that it really was a meeting of the mind would mean that each one of the agreements would be a little different from the others, because you know, there had to be some push and shove, debating on this, well, we want that, you know. But there is no meeting of the mind. So that creates a problem for that whole system. But on the other hand, there is an agreement, and that causes a different kind of a problem. So it's tough.
Well, one of the things that I think when I was talking with Eric about the issues that I was having with the HOA, the list is so long. There is one piece in this, when I call it Article 10N, where it was controlling rents. What was interesting about it is that they had this, you could rent it for 2 years and leave it empty, or not rent it for a year, and then you had the right to rent it for another 2 years, and then you had to live in it, or not rent or leave it empty for another year. It was like that, 2 year, 1 year, or 1 year, 2 year rule. So, but what was interesting about it is that it said in the case of foreclosure, it did not, or should I just say in general, the rule did not apply if the association took over your property in bankruptcy or foreclosure, or the bank. It did not apply to the bank or mortgager or to the association. It only applied to the alleged owner of the property.
Well, big business takes care of big business, don't they?
Right. So that, to me, that is not, what is it, equal protection.
Well, I'll tell you, I would never get involved in those agreements on anything, on purchasing a land or building a home and going to a loan, you know, the homeowner's, you know, what do they call it? The
homeowner's association?
Yeah, the association for homeowner's agreements, or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, I would never get involved with that. But people want to do those things for whatever, maybe because it's local, maybe because they like the neighborhood, maybe because they like the houses that are being built there, the community that's created, or whatever the case may be. I don't know.
Or there's really nothing else available. I know where I was living in Connecticut, there were really no options for anything other than a homeowners association.
Buy a piece of land and build a house.
Yeah, well, if you have $1 million.
Well, you've got to have a lot of money to go into those places anyway. What do they charge for the homes in those areas?
When I purchased in, it was $150,000. And the houses, I mean, I would love to have had a house, but the houses were $500,000. So if you were to ask me, they want to have homeowners associations cover the entire country. Like, it's taking over neighborhoods. Like, my sister, I warned my sister. My sister lives in Darien, Connecticut. And I warned her about, I said, you know, be really, really careful about neighborhood, because it's like a neighborhood association is just another form of homeowners association where they kind of hook you in with, hey, there's this common piece of property that runs between the houses. Let's just say that there's a hill that covers a bunch of properties. Why don't we go in together and maintain that as a neighborhood association? And that's how they hook you into...
Are you talking about an easement, you know, that goes in between the different properties?
Well, yeah, I guess they would call... Well,
you know, PIP, there's purposes for an easement. It could be for future access. That could be one. It could be for running, infrastructure, sewage, drainage, water. It could be well in that and run the lines off of that, the main lines. to feed the community. I mean, there's all kinds of, you know, easements are lawful, and I know I was involved in subdivisions, and we're always creating the necessary easements. It's just the way it is, has to be done that way. And usually that's turned over to the town. The town usually controls that. But in a private association, they can control it. They don't have to turn it over to the town.
Right, but that's just it. Like, they, once they get you, it's like the foot in the door. They, you give them an inch, they take a mile. Yeah, that just seems to be how things go, especially when it comes to land. You have to be so careful about the fine print. Like, you think you're agreeing to one thing and you're agreeing to something else. I mean, look, you have, I mean, Britain did it to an entire country called China, with writing two different types of agreements, one in Chinese, the other one in English, and that's how they end up dominating China, and that's why we're in a proxy war with China right now, because we're seen as the, you know,
high. They kept the drugs flowing.
Yeah, and they, guess what? They learned it really well. Look what they're doing in the United States, the same thing that Great Britain did to China in the Opium Wars, and then they, once they made these treaties with China and they tricked them, they basically, Great Britain strong-armed them because they were all on drugs, they're all high, and they also forced them to have the same agreements with the United States and with France. And so we are in a proxy war, and I could detail so many things that lay out right now all the pieces, especially here in Indiana. It's really bad. Like, we have there's a Chinese, Meng Qiang was born in Tianjin, China, and he is the president of Purdue University. And before he became president of Purdue University, he volunteered his wisdom and intelligence to the IEDC.IN.GOV, and gave his wisdom and advisement on several tech projects, which I have followed these tech projects, and I have done research on all of them. There is about $40 million missing. There's a Next Level Manufacturing Institute, Inc., that allegedly is a nonprofit, not listed with the IRS, not listed in Indiana, and had received $40 million in grant money through economic development stuff. And I mean, I'm following the money, and it disappeared. Now I'm concerned, like, what did they build? They built something, and I've been requesting their Exhibit A vouchers and so on, and they're telling me, oh, it's trade secret. We can't provide you with that information. They're saying it's secret information. Like, yeah, they received taxpayer money through what's called a 21 fund. Like, it's just so, everything's just so ridiculous. And, I mean, we have, China owns us. Running us. But my concern is, I heard a rumor that they were building a hydrogen collider here in Indiana, and I was like, what is that? It's like, oh, CERN. So there's like a mini CERN being built here, and now I have $40 million missing. Did it cost $40 million to build a mini hydrogen collider like CERN here in Indiana? I don't know. I was not trained to do this kind of, to do, like, this kind of surveillance research. I mean, I'm not trained in that. I'm trained in the auditor, and I follow the money, and I ask lots of questions, and now I've reached this dead end going, yeah, this is the money's gone. It's missing. $40 million, just poof.
Yeah.
So, hey, long story short, and that's all very interesting, but the homeowners associations are insidious. Yeah. To Marianne's point, yeah, it might look like an easement or just land that you're taking care of, but they're going to rope you into a structure. And because everyone is so ignorant, as you talk about all the time, John, mm-hmm. they're going to be roped in, and they're not going to know what they're being roped into. And the next thing you know, it's a technocracy, and they control every single facet of our lives like they pretty much already do now. And if you go to constitutional compliance, and that should happen at the local level, it should happen, every county should have this, constitutional compliance. It should be a subcommittee of the Committee of Safety. You'd see that these homeowners
We could do that, Eric. People have to do is get together and decide to do that. You know, but again, they have to have a Committee of Safety. But go ahead.
No, we could. And, you know, to quote at least a small handful of the founding fathers, we need to keep a jealous eye on our liberties because they're just taking left, right, and center. And like you were saying, I mean, as recently, well, you say it all the time, but like we've been burned in every possible way imaginable, even unimaginable. They just keep burning us.
Yeah, and a lot of people don't even realize it. Yep.
Yeah, they don't even realize it. And Mike Adams did an interview with a fellow who's really kind of like what Mary Ann seems to be doing. He's going at a real torrid pace, and he's figured out that these property taxes. Now, of course, we need to address this, and like you say, I hope you're right. Property taxes will disappear. Direct taxes will disappear. I don't know about that. That'd
no
be great.
No doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. They're unconstitutional. This guy's found out that in Texas, where he's at, they're running a scam on the property taxes, and the scam is that the people from the state, and he said there's a couple of different layers. It's like the comptroller will come in and say, hey, I've got a budget. I need you to get this much money. And then another group of people will come in and say, hey, we've got a budget. We need you to get this much money. And so it has nothing to do with the valuation of the property, which, by the way, again, if you can have your house taxed away from you, you don't own it, so it's unconstitutional. Our country was not founded on us being serfs one day.
You can't be taxed on something over and over again that you own. I mean, it's absurd.
Yeah, it's absurd. Exactly. And so he's found out this scam. He's figured it out. And he's beat these people in court, but they just keep coming back the next year and then the next year and then the next year. But anyway, the point is we're really getting burned hard. And these homeowner associations, they're really insidious, and they're being used by the bar. And Mary Ann pointed out when we spoke of this some time ago, and she shared some documents, you know, they went in and Mary Ann's and changed the rules. Isn't that how it went, Mary Ann? They changed the rules on you. They had some new attorney come in and they just, I mean, I'm sure it's commonplace all across the country. They go in and they change the rules whenever it suits their needs.
Well, in my case,
well, let me make a suggestion here for anybody that's stuck in this kind of a situation. You know, you have all of the people that are involved in that particular agreement. I mean, if there's something really, you should try to get together to discuss them without the elitist part of that group. And and you know, if you come together and make decisions, say, hey, we're going to change these rules. We're going to get rid of this. We're going to get rid of that. I think you'd have a case there to be able to do that. So I don't know what kind of relationships people might have with their neighbors that are in the same boat they're in. And they may have some problems, or they may have problems that will erupt in the future that they're not aware of, and you may bring it to light. So I think you can get a consensus on a majority of the people and make changes. And I think that's an empowerment to do that. There's no elitist up there, and as far as the law is concerned, that governs over all the people. They're just claiming to have the majority rule over this thing. They created this, you came in on this, and nothing can change. It's forever. Well, that's not true. Nothing is forever. You can make adjustments as you go. You just need the majority.
Okay,
so that's
one way
to defeat these people.
I could not get a majority. In fact, I had arguments. I sent out letters to everybody in the entire association, all the homeowners. Basically, they are the association. What people kept thinking was that the association is these like three people who ruled over everybody. I'm like, no.
To some degree, it is.
The committee, there's an executive board, but we are the association, all the people, but they're so caught up, they're brainwashed. It was completely brainwashed. I had arguments. I sat there at this one meeting, there were like 10 people there, and this the president of the board or whatever, this young, she was younger than I was at the time, and she just said to me, like, so you're right and everyone's wrong. And I said, yes, I'm right and everyone here is wrong. And it turned out she was a paralegal, and she sold her place not very long after that because she realized I was right. And
well, you mentioned earlier to buy a home is about $300,000 or $200,000. What number did you give it?
At the time when I purchased it, it was $150, and that was in 1980.
Yeah, but I mean, to buy a home, particularly instead of getting involved in what you got involved with.
Oh, in Connecticut, it would have been about $500,000.
Oh, yeah, that's big.
Well, to not be in an association. And so where we are now, I live in Indiana, and we overpaid for our property because we bought in just as the downturn started. So the prices, the interest rates were going up. So we're at 6.75%, and I was trying to buy into a 2.25 interest rate, but I just matter of fact, the Freedom Mortgage, the one I was trying to buy into for the 2.25 rate, they stalled. Like they kept kicking. They screwed things up, and so I had to go conventional mortgage, which was triple the amount. So we're stuck in wind here. Trump has to get back. we're barely breathing here. So
the average home in 2024, and I know we spoke about this a few weeks ago. I originally wrote a paper called 2 Cents Worth, and that was back in 2008. So recently I updated it to, and now it's the value of a dollar right now, which was 2 cents in 2008. It's now 0.75 cents. And so that's the value of a dollar right now, 0.75 cents, not even a penny. Okay, the average home back today is about $317,000. So, but back in 1913, before all this craziness happened, and we had inflation, and the Federal Reserve and all that stuff, an average home was $3,395. That's what it cost to build a home. I remember when I first went into business, framing was getting $1.50, $1.75 a square foot to frame. You can't do that no more. You're like $30-$40 a square foot to frame, and it's just ridiculous. A new car back in 1913 was $490. Today it's almost $50,000. I mean, that's insane. It's like buying a house. I mean, it's total insanity. These cell phones that's the biggest ripoff ever. I mean, look at, I've got one heck of a computer system set up, double screens, huge screens and everything. And I got like, I don't know how many terabytes, maybe 10, 20 terabytes of probably about 10 or 12 terabytes in my computer. I got a pretty high speed. And I'll tell you what, some of these cell phones cost more than my computer. I mean, what's that all about? I mean, how do people pay for that? That's insanity, And people do, and then we give it to our children, and then they become demoralized, totally destroyed. When you give a child a smartphone, okay, I think you're destroying them. I really do believe that. It's not necessarily true in everything, because my children have phones, and they've had phones since they were pretty young. But we've monitored them. They don't get into stupid, crazy stuff on their phones. Or anything. But a lot of people, they give the kids the phone, they're not really watching what's going on. I mean, I see some of this stuff like one of my nephews do, and I just, what they do on these things is in total craziness. Demoralizing, destructive, injurious. They injure each other. It's unbelievable. And they do the same thing with computers, too. You can't put a child on a computer and just let them be there. You got to monitor that. But people aren't going to monitor it. They shouldn't bring phones to school. Okay, that should not be allowed at all, because that is hugely destructive. But in any event, as Eric was saying, we've been destroyed everywhere. I mean, just look what they've done to our economy, A loaf of bread back in 1913 was 6 cents. Today it's the cheapest bread you can buy is like $2.50. You can get a small loaf of maybe like a Stop and Shop or something for sometimes $1.49. But generally speaking, bread, $3-$4 a loaf. It's insane. But we're going to go back. You see, this is where Trump's right on it. Okay, Trump, I listened to Trump, close enough and long enough to know exactly what he's doing. And that's why I'm absolutely 100, well, I can never say 100% in anything. I say 99.9 maybe, percent positive, absolute. IRS is gone. Federal Reserve is gone. eventually taxes on houses are going to be gone. All gone. We're going back to gold and silver. Has to be. He's going constitutional. There's no doubt about it. He's going according to the law. So with that in mind, what he needs to learn and understand is that that document is a common law document. We, the people, ordained and established. You know, what was that judge's name from Jersey? He was pretty popular on Fox. Judge Napolitano. Okay. He was a Federalist. He belonged to the Federalist Association. And I've heard him on a couple occasions say this, there's a problem with the Constitution. It was never meant to be. It should never have been we the people. It should have been we the states. Just think the mess. We wouldn't even be here. If it was we the states and they had their way, we the states, we're done. We're gone. We have no rights, nothing.
Yeah. People need to realize, like the state needs to realize and need to be reminded that 9 comes before 10. The 9th Amendment comes before the 10th Amendment. Yep. The people, the rights belong to us, and they get sloppy seconds or thirds. So, I mean, the federal government is totally limited. The rights belong to us, and then the state has whatever we want to give them. Everything's been flipped on its head.
Here's the thing about the states, okay? You know, we have the federal constitution, which is the law of the land. It governs everything. It's at least it's supposed to govern everything. Anything in state constitution or the laws of any state repugnant to that constitution is null and void. Same thing to our rights. And if there's anything that I've learned, okay, is that I understand to take the Bill of Rights as a ruler of justice, a ruler of what powers and authorities a state might have. Because anything that a state does that violates one of my unalienable rights, and it doesn't necessarily have to be written down in those 10 amendments. I mean, you know, the right to travel isn't written down there, but it's taken, it's obvious, you know. It's just common sense. I have a right to travel. And so many other rights that I have to do whatever I please to do as long as I don't injure another person. I have that right. So that's the ruler to be used in whatever law or whatever the state is doing or tries to do or whatever powers they try to take. Once it affects a right, it's done. It's null and void. Or if it affects the other things in the Constitution, of course. So they could be totally under control pretty easily as long as we can get our federal level back. That's what we need to do, and that's what we're working on. That's the key. That's the focus of NLA, by the way. Get the federal court back.
Yes, get the federal court back. But when you're in a police state, I mean, we could be saying this till we're blue in the face. But if they have the police powers to control it, you know, to say,
But there's a new sheriff in town. So you're absolutely right. Look at it. If Trump wasn't getting in or we didn't have a Trump, we'd just be spinning our wheels still. We would be lost. As a matter of fact, we would have been enslaved a long time ago. You know, Hillary would have gotten in instead of him, and we'd be in concentration camps. I'm absolutely convinced of that.
Oh, did you ever see, there's a video out there, it's cartoony, kind of video called After the Reset? I think you could find it on YouTube. It's called After the Reset. And it's terrifying. It was according to what was going on at the time and where we were being railroaded into. So it is pretty accurate. Yeah, everything's rewritten, going down the memory hole, you know, all no more history. I see history being rewritten in my little town. They've changed the spelling of my little town. We were named after Congressman DeMott. It was D-E space capital M-O-T-T-E. And then they conflated the DeMott and took out the space, and now it's becoming a lowercase m. And I'm like, no, it's not, because that we are named after DeMott. And I even had this debate with, I'm taking it to the county, and I said, listen, we're losing the history. I mean, the history, the historical building, they moved the these ladies who were keeping maintaining the historical records, they removed them from this called Fairchild House, this really nice house. It was right next to the library, and they put them in this like trolley car that's like falling apart. The floor is falling through. They keep coming to DeMont and saying, can we please get some funding to replace the floors? And we can only have certain hours because the heat keeps going out. And these women are being dedicated. They dedicated their time to maintaining the historical records, but they're being lost. And so I'm watching all this happen, and it's just so outrageous. And the library is a mess. I did one of those FOIA requests or records requests.
And that's a piece of paper too. My goodness, everything is a FOIA. You know, look, it used to be there's a lot of things you can get, and they didn't give you a hard time. You know, as a builder, I was a builder, and as a builder, you know, I would go down to the town and get all the records I need on the property I'm looking at or mm-hmm. the existing structure. I can get the copy of the prints and anything I wanted, okay, down in the town. But all of a sudden, one day I walked into the town, in one of the towns, and I had to FOIA it. I said, what are you talking FOIA it? I don't have time to FOIA it. I want to do my work, you know, and this is now it's just standard practice. By the time I left, it's standard practice all over New York, up in my area.
Well, think back if you can ever think back to what year that was, because that would be really interesting to nail that down. Like what year
that was about. Let me think about this. That was about the turning into the 2000s, somewhere around there. Coming into 2000, that's when the first time I came up to that, you know.
Okay. Because the way they do things through like the UN and their control structure that they put in place, everything's based on decades. So if you look at the beginning, you look at the turn of a decade, and you see what happens. It's amazing all the craziness that happens in the first year of a decade. Mm-hmm. Of a new decade.
They were moving us, of course, into concentration camps. When mm-hmm. I became aware of the problems, my awareness and the problems started in about 1999. And then I got involved I was involved with We the People, with Robert Schultz. And then I got involved with the Ron Paul movement and then the Tea Parties and all that. Around that time, I was getting ready for war. I mean, getting weapons, ammunition, just getting ready for war. You know, because I really felt that that's where we're heading to be, you know, where there was going to be a war. They're coming out after the people. They keep taking our freedoms, abusing us, false accusations, all this stuff, destroying everything. Everything's being destroyed, you know, and, you know, mm-hmm. but we're heading there. Now, Hillary Clinton was supposed to be the closure on this whole thing. You know, by the time she came out of office, which, of course, Trump took it in, we would have been done with by now.
And if you look at when we start to see what's going to happen.
I don't
have
10 seconds.
Okay. We start to see what's going to happen between now and the next couple of years till we get to the 250th anniversary of our country, our Constitutional Republic.
Where do you want to be in? Have you figured that out? going back to 1789, so...
Well, I think 70... I do believe 76, because that's what Lincoln said, you know,
well,
47 years ago. You know, like he was... I think he... Yeah.
Mm. Well, we actually became an actual... Well, yeah, the colonies were formed kind of loosely prior to the Constitution being out there. So to some degree, we had that agreement. So maybe, I guess that would be...
It's around 1775. Isn't it 74, 75, maybe...
Well, 74 would be, you know, really the Declaration of Independence would be the key to that, so...
Yeah. So the colonies became states. If that's what you're looking at, I think it is 75, maybe. Could be 74.
Because then they had, you know, there's traveling and all that stuff, and getting the pay and writing the declaration and then getting it applied. So I guess you can get to that technical point. But 1776, and we add 250 years to that. What does that give us? Let's see, 1776 plus 250.
Yeah, 250.
Yeah, yeah. 2026. So that's 1 year after Trump being in office for 1 year.
Yeah, and we're supposed to have that celebration. Hey, well, real quick note. I know we got to go, but there's this email that I get, and they call themselves History Facts, and you know, I don't know a lot of times if they're lying or just ignorant. But they have this one that came out October 22nd. Listen to this. The sport all Englishmen had to practice. Archery used to be required by law for English men. And it talks about how you had to know how to use the longbow. Now, if you remember some of the things that are in Brent's book, Excellence of the Common Law, mm-hmm. you know, you had to have 30 sharpened arrows in your quiver at all times. And it goes through a few different kings in this email that they sent. And one of them, they outlawed any other sport. The only sport you could play would be the longbow. And remember, Jefferson, and Brent brings this up too, Jefferson said, forget about the ball, get good with the gun. The point I want to make here is that there's a real problem with sports. I think for what we want to accomplish, we need to be more disciplined, and we need to require this of the, quote, men, unquote, in our country. I think we need a moratorium, I know this sounds crazy, on sports, professional sports, and maybe even college, because men will just follow college sports if they can't have professional sports. I just want to put this seed out there, but I'm real serious about this, because...
Yeah, I think you're right. Sports have been destructive to us in many ways, and especially in our relationship with God, because the big, big events are always on a Sunday.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, and if you've ever gotten into any videos where people break these Super Bowl halftime shows down, I mean, they're absolutely satanic. I mean, completely satanic. They are pushing Satanism, and they have their symbolism all over it. I mean, it's really, really bad. But I'm just talking about men not being, like you were talking about how you got to have, what, 3 or 4 hours a month to have liberty? Well, these guys aren't going to give it up. Because they've got to watch sports, and then after that, they've got to watch more sports, because a lot of these sports overlap all year long. I'm not kidding. It's a serious...
Then they have to work, and then they have to spend some time with their family. So, yeah. Well, look at that. We do have to... Here's the bottom line on anything, anyway, at least today especially, and this has been said a long, long time ago. But we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participate. And if you can get 300,000 people, roughly speaking, across the nation to participate, you take 100% control of all things. That simple. 100 people working together in one county, and every county doing the same thing, that's a huge thing. I mean, you're holding everybody's feet to the fire, okay? From local government all the way up to the federal end. You know, because once you get the counties organized, you're now dealing with your Congress, county to county. And then you get the whole state organized, you're dealing with not only your state government, but you're dealing with, the entire federal system. So, but, yeah, we have to, people got to, look at, if people aren't going to do it and they're not interested, well, then we don't deserve liberty because we're not going to have it. You know? That simple. So God talks about the sluggard, you know. Okay, we got to close down. We're 8 minutes over. All right, we'll see you next Monday. Good night, everybody.
Good night.